The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's the Crossover.
Crossover! Step back!
Presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen right here on 960theref.com.
Episode 97, closing in on 100, the century mark. It's the Crossover Podcast presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville and also now in Five Points. Chris Brame from the Home Team, David Johnston from the Morning Show with what has been a busy week, an exciting week with the Major League Baseball trade deadline passing, the Dogs picking up a couple of verbal commitments. We'll get into all that as we are now, as we record this, in August. It's the first day of August. We're 30 days until kickoff. So for the rest of the year, every single month, there will be a college football game. That's the good news. The bad news is we still do have to wait a pretty long time because it's not until the end of August that we get to it. But still, it is August and the Dogs do kick off this month.
And Brame, I will be in Vegas for week zero, so if you need anything taken care of while I'm out there, just let me know. And I'm excited because they moved the Miami and the Florida game to that weekend. Plus, there's Arizona and Hawaii as well,
yeah.
So there are two
That's
college
on the
football
island.
Games on the island, exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, if you have a bad day, you can get right with Hawaii in the over. Is that still a thing? That was a thing. That was the glory days of June Jones. It was Hawaii in the over when you had a bad day.
Well, and then it got to the point of don't bet against Hawaii on the island, and I think that got proven to be not such a good thing.
Once people started catching on to that, I think the odds makers adjusted. Like, yes, please continue to not bet against or bet on Hawaii on the island or whatever.
Yeah, so just let me know if you've you got anything you need taken care of, you got any futures. If I ask you right now, who am I putting the Heisman money on? Am I putting it on Trevor Lawrence? Am I putting it on Tua?
Well, I think with those guys, those are they're the safest bets as the favorite. I'm not going to argue against them on that.
You're looking for value, right?
Yeah, when it comes to just in odds. Now, I guess it comes down to, no, I'm making one bet, so I want to put my money on a guy that's got the best chance to win.
Right.
Or do you want to do it where there's the potential for a bigger return and a payday? And that's where I think that Fromm is a worthy investment.
Right.
So,
because
Georgia's going to be good. He's the quarterback of the team. He's going to get an awful lot of credit for why they're good. And, you know, post LSU last year, I've argued there wasn't a quarterback in the country who played better than Fromm. And I'm including Kyler Murray and Tua in that, the two guys that ended up 1-2 in the Heisman ceremony last year.
Well, you know, Tua last year didn't play in a lot of fourth quarters. And is Trevor Lawrence going to be in that same boat this year? Could Fromm potentially be in that same boat this year as well? I mean, I don't know. Will that
Let's hope.
Will that be a big factor in how some people vote for that kind of an individual award? I know Bama's got bigger games in November than Clemson does. Georgia has bigger games in November than Clemson does. Does that have a factor in any of this stuff? I don't know.
Yeah, I think the one thing to think about with Clemson and the potential for Lawrence is – while I expect their defense to still be terrific, it's got to at least come down a notch, which could lead Lawrence to playing in a few more fourth quarters. But I would expect Tua would have a lot of early exits like he did last year because, I mean, Alabama's schedule. I mean, the more you look at it, it's just they should be embarrassed that they're playing the schedule that they are.
Saban says nobody will play him.
Oh, is that right?
He's got the same thing going now that Georgia's got.
Isn't that Central Florida's excuse, too?
Yeah.
No one will play them?
Yeah, no one will play him.
Oh, all right.
There probably is something to that.
What, no one wanting to play Bama?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they've got some games lined up in the future.
They finally got Wisconsin for 24 and 25.
Yeah, they got Texas, Notre Dame.
So they are
the
starting
playing
the schedule,
them.
Yeah, a little bit better.
Yeah.
But I still think that's because the coaches realize – you know, all these games that are getting scheduled out so far, I think the coaches realize it's going to be an 8-team playoff instead of a 4-team playoff.
There's no doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, that's even with Georgia's aggressive scheduling.
Exactly.
We're like, well, we're going to play Florida State and Clemson in the same year, or Texas and Florida State in the same year. But, yeah, I think they know after 25 when this current
playoff cycle runs out. There are going to be eight teams.
And I still think, too, there's a certain amount of pressure that's being exerted by the money people, the fan, is like to schedule better. If you're asking us for all this money to attend these games, you got to do better on the schedule.
Yeah. Well, and it's good. I hope that is the case, because it seems like more and more these days, like, the fans really aren't being considered when it comes to, like, the Pac-12 is, we might kick off at 9 a.m. so people on the East Coast can watch our games at noon. But what about fans on the West that might want to go to the games? Yeah. Like, they don't even care, or even, I'm tired of talking about it, but just like the Georgia-Florida thing in Jacksonville, where like the attitude is like, well, we're going to do what's best for the University of Georgia and Georgia football. Like, well, what about what the fans have enjoyed and appreciated about that game?
So
I do like, maybe there is some pressure, but it'll take fans not showing up to those games.
Right.
And at this point, many of us are not willing to do that.
No, not when your team is right there at the top of the mountain, or, you know, right below the top of the mountain. Fans are coming.
Yeah. Well, like, with,
but it's not the case for everybody.
With the announcement that I thought was funny the other day, that one school, Charlotte, was very happy and excited to announce that they're going to be playing Georgia in 2025. Meanwhile, Georgia has not announced that yet or anything, because they probably just assume no one know about it. But like, that's going to be the home finale in 2025.
Yeah.
And if you look at the home schedule right now, and I guess there's still one spot open, the home schedule in 2025 is garbage.
Yeah.
So, because that's just, you get the Missouri, South Carolina, Kentucky, and
LSU is the West opponent.
And then you've got Charlotte, and there's one, and then we're going to UCLA and going to Tech that year. So there's still one vacancy for another home game, but
yeah. Is something coming on that one? But it is funny that, and Georgia's paying Charlotte $1.9 million. That was the report in the Charlotte Observer. Have we had a $2 million opponent yet?
For Georgia?
Yeah, like in one of those kind of games.
I don't know.
That's another thing, too. The schools like Charlotte's and Conference USA teams, they have a little leverage in this, because schools need home, or they're trying to schedule home games like that. They can drive the price up a little bit.
Yeah, they can get into a bidding war.
Exactly.
With whoever.
Exactly. But, so this help programs out like Charlotte to fund their athletic program.
Yeah, which is subsidized then by Georgia fans.
Correct.
Who have to buy those tickets.
So your money's not just going to Georgia. It's going to the Arkansas States and the Charlottes and the UABs of the world, or whoever it happens to be.
But that's like – home finale, what, in 15 was against Georgia Southern.
Right.
And before that, because of 9/11, Georgia ended the year in 01 with Houston.
Right.
Which was just they were awful that year.
Right.
But, I mean, that's just –
go ahead.
But other than that, Georgia's home finales are against Tech, or Kentucky's been in there.
It was Massachusetts last year. Or, no, I'm sorry, Tech was here. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was Kentucky in 17. So in the odd number years. Yeah, so this year it's A&M.
Yeah. Next year it'll be Tech.
Yeah. In the odd numbered years, so 25 will be Charlotte.
Yeah, there's either been it's either been Tech or at least some SEC game. Except we did have Southern in 15 and then Houston in 01.
Yeah.
So I mean, but to think of but the last home game you're going to play is in Charlotte?
Well, the schedule just ain't what it used to be.
No, not at all. But
what it used to be.
We'll talk a little more Georgia coming up with the two verbal commitments they picked up earlier in the week, as they get set for, kickoff in just 30 days as we record this. But the Braves have won a lot of us over by making some moves in the bullpen, and it was timely, too, because the bullpen was blowing yet another save against Washington on Wednesday, which was the trade deadline. The Braves did end up winning that game, but it was within that hour then that news was coming down that they added Detroit closer Shane Green, who was an all-star this year and is having a terrific season, and also Mark Melanson from the Giants. And I guess the night before they picked it was Chris Martin from Texas.
Right.
So, but the Braves really did. They added three guys to the bullpen that I think will come to Atlanta now and instantly be Atlanta's three best relievers.
They traded with teams we were hoping they would. it didn't turn out to be the pitchers we thought, because, you know, Mike Minor's name from the Rangers had been kicked around. Mad Bum had been kicked around from the Giants. So they do make trades with those teams. But Alex Anthopoulos said the situation was it was best for relievers more than position players or starting pitchers, at least I think is what other teams were asking for. You know, would the Braves have been willing to trade, like, you know, not necessarily a Pache or a Waters or an Ian Anderson? I mean, if there had been a top player that they could have gotten. But a lot of these teams are saying, well, we don't just want Ian Anderson, you know, your third guy in your system. We want your number 7 or 8 guy as well. And I think that's where teams are not wanting to do that, because a guy that they think, like a Kyle Wright or an Ian Anderson, who have either pitched in the bigs already, have already made their debut, or who have, you know, done enough to be right there, do you want to trade that guy for a Bumgarner that you don't know is going to be back next year? And then, you know, you could bring up an Ian Anderson and you still got like 3 years of control on him too. I mean, that's, the teams might just be asking for too much, and that might be why we didn't see Bumgarner get traded. That's why we didn't see maybe Mike Minor get traded. Who else was there? Was a couple of big starters that were out there that ended up staying put. And I know some of it has to do, like, the Giants, they made that run all of a sudden. They got good all of a sudden, and they start thinking, hey, we could get a wild card, which I just don't see that happening. But, you know, does that affect him? And then the relievers that you get, I think it's funny too, because fans are like either really upset with their GM or really loving their GM about players that they did or didn't get that they'd never heard of the day before.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Or even with like Melanson,
yeah.
You see like, boy, the Braves are paying his entire salary because he's making $14 million, yeah. And he's due to make that again next year, which is like a ridiculous price tag for a guy who now is a setup guy.
Who dropped off. Like, he was, getting 40, 50 saves, like, 3 or 4 years
ago.
Yeah,
he led the NL one year when he was with the Pirates.
Yeah.
I think he saved, like, 51 games.
Yeah.
But
now, he's making $14 million to be John Wetland or, a big setup guy. John Wetland's probably not a good example to use right now.
He's had his
off-the-field issues. But you know what I mean.
Him and Leyritz, those old Yankees.
Yes.
That had, like, you know, crushed the Braves at one point.
Now. And if you haven't heard, you can go look it up.
You could Google it.
Yes, you can Google it. But anyway, to be a setup guy.
Yeah.
That's what if that wins you a World Series, if getting Martin and getting Melanson and getting Green wins you a World Series, it's worth it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So in the Braves could figure out in the offseason what that $14 million price tag will allow them to do or not do. I mean, Donaldson's probably going to come off the books. Although he's had a good year, maybe Atlanta will try and keep him. Who knows? But that's like, what, 20-something million they're paying him?
I would think the Braves would make him an offer, but it's one he could refuse.
Yeah.
And try to get a
multi-year.
3 or 4 year deal. Or, yeah, a multi-year deal with somebody else. That would be my thinking. But at first he looked like a bad acquisition, but I don't think you can argue with what he's provided this team.
No, he's tied for the team lead in homers, and I think the real hope with him was he'd be able to come on and hit 30-something home runs, and I guess he's tracking to do that.
That was a big home run he hit yesterday.
Yeah, so he did get off to a slow start, but he's definitely come along and picked it up. But the Braves improved its bullpen. You know, the starting pitching, if it comes down to a series against the Dodgers are way better in the starting rotation.
Right.
But I do think like a real wild card in the Braves rotation has suddenly become Teheran, who's actually had a really good year.
He has. He doesn't have the wins and losses to show for it, but he's pitched very well. In the month of July, he's been really good.
Yeah, and he was really good in May, too. Now, in June, he kind of turned back into Julio.
Yeah.
So he's been up and down this season, but
I have a criticism, and he's not the only one, but the Braves don't – their starters, they don't go long enough. You know, that's the problem. There's just – maybe it's a lot of teams where you just use up too many pitches in 5 innings. And then you turn it over to the bullpen, and then it becomes a roller coaster.
Yeah, and then those guys are taxed. But Soroka at least is starting to get stretched a little bit. But Teheran, even when he goes good, it's like he does. It does feel
like
he's
5 2/3.
Yeah, because he walks a tightrope.
Yeah,
but he's not giving up home runs at the rate that he was last year.
No.
And that's what I like about you know, like Melanson, because you look at some of the Braves relievers. This Tomlin's given up 11 home runs. Jackson's given up like 7. Melanson's given up 3.
Right.
He strikes out about a batter an inning, so he misses bats. He doesn't have a high walk rate, and he doesn't give up a lot of home runs. And those are things the Braves' bullpen have all struggled with this season.
Well, the thing just grinding my gears, and the Braves got away with it, too, in the series against the Nationals. They walked 20 in the three games.
Yeah.
It's like if you give up homers, I mean, the ball is definitely jumping this year. Everybody's hitting home runs, but when you're just giving away bases like that is what just the Braves are hard to watch for me when they're pitching, and it's not just about the bullpen. It's just they're hard to watch.
Well, during his the clubhouse interview after the day game against the Nationals on Wednesday, someone asked Brian Snitker, was like, "Do you get tired of, you know, seeing the fight in this team and the way they're always and, you know," and it was it was a dumb question. Yeah. Like, what's he going to say? No, but like I got the feeling like you could tell with his answer that he was like, "Well, I don't get tired of that, but let me tell you what I am getting tired of. It's this bullpen.
This bullpen and all these walks.
Yeah.
All these free bases."
Because he was like, yeah, it was great that the team was able to come back and Donaldson hit that big home run in the 10th inning, but we shouldn't have even been in the 10th inning.
Exactly.
So.
Hey, and Luke Jackson, he's Luke Jackson. Is he in a role that he probably shouldn't be in? Yes.
Yeah.
Now with these trades, maybe he finds his niche in the bullpen. I mean, he definitely has an upside. It's not like he's terrible, but he hadn't been a good closer. And I don't think was ever the plan anyway, and they just kind of went with that. But now they've got guys that can do it. So if it's still a bad bullpen, then this is on the pitchers or the coaches or whatever. I don't know.
Well, they tried.
They tried.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because if I was just going to have one little like quibble about Green, it would be that he's a guy who is having a year unlike any he's ever had, and you just hope that he continues to have the year he is, and at some point he doesn't, you know, as I like to say, regress to the mean.
Yeah, exactly.
So
would you rather have them gotten Kimbrel and not these guys, or would you have rather them gotten this version of Oventbrel?
Yeah, I like this because Green is having a great year. Kimbrel hadn't even been pitching.
Right, right.
So it's just a matter of hopefully Green can pick it up, because I know he had 32 saves last year, but if you look at all his other stats last season, he was not good.
Which goes to show you the save stat can be very misleading.
Yeah, but like last year he was not – like the Braves would not have traded for him if it was a year ago.
Right.
And been excited about it. Yeah.
Last year they were trading for Adam Duvall and – whoever else.
Oh, Gausman, right?
Oh, and Gausman.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's funny how, like, Duvall ended up not doing anything and spent all this year in Gwinnett, and now all of a sudden he's up, and it's like, well, a year later, maybe he will be like what the Braves had hoped he was last year.
Well, all I can go by with him is that when he's playing every day, he rakes. And when he's part of your bench, he doesn't do as well. That was what happened to him last year.
Yeah, because he didn't hit a home run at all after
he
got traded.
Yeah, the one he hit. The first one he hit this year was his first as a Brave.
As a Brave,
Yeah. So maybe he stays in the lineup and continues to rake.
Yeah. Well, I know that Markakis is coming back and he's not he doesn't have to have surgery, but he fractured his wrist, so I'm a little sketchy on what he's going to be like once he does return.
And how much did that change what the Braves were trying to do trade wise? You know, if Inciarte was brought up in a lot of these deals, suddenly with Markakis getting hurt, then Inciarte has a lot more importance to this team. Yeah. And I'll say this, watching him play defense and center, and I love Ronald Acuna, but there's a big difference defensively between those two.
Yeah, I would like to keep Inciarte around and for the postseason. Like, he'd be a solid late-inning defensive substitution.
Absolutely.
He's a gold glover.
Exactly.
All right, the Crossover Podcast presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville and in Five Points. Subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also listen on demand anytime at 960theref.com. We will pause here briefly, and then when we return, we'll talk some Georgia football. Georgia with a couple more big commitments earlier in the week. Chris and Dave with you, the crossover podcast here on 960theref.com.
True Italian food has returned to Five Points and brought some friends along, because Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen is now open in Five Points, Athens. At the new Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen, you'll find all your Italian favorites, from pizza to calzones and baked ziti, along with sandwiches, salads, wings, and more, plus a full bar for beer, wine, and cocktails. It's time to eat at the now open Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen at Five Points in Athens, and also in the Manders Crossing Shopping Center off Mars Hill Road in Watkinsville.
All right, episode 96 rolling on. It is half number two, the crossover
97,
podcast.
97, Bramer.
97, that's right. I miss 96.
The old, that's right, Jeff and I had the old 96er last week.
All right, so yeah, episode 97, the crossover podcast presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville and in Five Points. As we're recording this, Georgia's 30 days from kicking things off in Nashville against Vanderbilt. Talking about futures, too. Like, talk about value in futures. Like, it's all been sucked out since the beginning of the year, where Georgia now, their chances to win the national championship, I think they're sitting at like 6-1. So since you have to do the, you know, the two extra games in the playoff, win a semifinal and win the championship game, I'd probably take a run at the dogs as SEC champs. The odds aren't as good for that. I think they're 2.5 or 3-1 or something like that. But, you know, winning the SEC championship is just, you got to win the East and then win that game, as opposed to you have to win the East, win the SEC championship game, unless you're Alabama, and then also win two additional games to win the whole thing.
Well, you're the guy that's always looking for the value, right, over the more sure thing, which doesn't pay as much.
Right. Like, I would bet Georgia to win the SEC over them winning the national championship, even if I think Georgia can win or is going to win the national championship.
Right.
Because I do think they have to win the SEC. I don't think they could lose. I don't think they could not win the East and somehow end up like Bama or Ohio State, who have made the playoff and not even appeared in their conference title games.
So Barrett Salee, who covers college football for CBS and various other, I guess, entities, Phil Steele, they both have a Clemson-Alabama Big Ten team and Georgia in that order, which would mean if it were 1, 2, 3, 4 like that, number one Clemson and number four Georgia would be playing in Atlanta in the Peach Bowl. So both of those people that are picking the playoff are basically saying that if it's Alabama and Georgia in the playoff, that Bama has beaten Georgia to win the SEC championship and Georgia gets in as the 4 seed. If they've got Alabama as the 2,
so they're projecting Georgia's 12-0 then.
12-0 with a loss to Bama. That's the thing. Do you think Georgia would get the benefit of the doubt? And again, I understand it has to do with Ohio State, Oklahoma, their situation as well. But I'd hate to put that to chance.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to put it to chance. But if Georgia was 12-1. And their only loss was in the title game to Bama, I would think the odds would be good that they, if you were making the case of like, all right, who are the 4 best teams in the country? Yeah, Georgia is
Georgia's
one of them.
One of the 4 best.
I just don't think Georgia's going to be able to clear this schedule undefeated.
Really?
I think even like the last 2 years, as great as they've been, Kirby hadn't won a road game against the West, and all 3 have been blowouts.
Mm-hmm.
Got blown out in Oxford, blown out at Auburn, blown out at LSU.
So you're predicting that against Auburn again this year?
Auburn to me does set up as the toughest one to win, because they're off a bye. It's over there. It's the third game in that 4-game gauntlet of Florida, Missouri, Auburn, Texas A&M. Any team would have a hard time going undefeated in November with Georgia's schedule.
Does it surprise you that Georgia is the only Power 5 school in the country with 5 teams playing them coming off a bye? And I know Georgia's got 2 games where that balances out, but they're the only – well, I'll take that back. Notre Dame has 7 games where the other team is coming off a bye. But do you count Kent State – who is it, Bowling Green or whoever, and New Mexico State?
Yeah.
But Georgia – after Notre Dame, Georgia's the only team that has 5 opponents coming off byes that are in the Power 5.
Yeah, I think it's Georgia's reached a point now where teams are probably going to want to schedule an off day before they play them.
And in November, I mean, I know the Florida game cancels out, but we'll play Missouri with them coming off a bye. We'll play Auburn with them coming off a bye. So those are two games.
Yeah, it's three straight games.
Yeah.
And I know the Florida game, like you said, cancels out, but it's also going, if you go throw South Carolina in there, it's four out of five opponents will have a bye before they play Georgia.
Yeah. And the flip side of that, Tech has no opponents coming off a bye.
Oh, really?
They're the only, I believe, Power 5 school that falls in that category.
Well, you see, that's because who needs a week off before they play Tech? And Tech's weird. Doing that little thing. They're playing the Thursday night before we play them.
That's right.
So they have scheduled them a couple extra days.
Yeah. So, hey, if you can do it, do it. But they have no opponents coming off a bye.
I seem to remember, and maybe I'm misremembering, like Roger Clemens, but there was a couple years ago when Alabama had a schedule like that. They actually complained to league office about it.
That,
Now, since then, Bama doesn't seem to have as many opponents that play them coming off byes. And you would think like teams would want to schedule byes before Bama.
Yeah. And Texas A&M's coming off a bye, but Bama's on one. LSU's coming off a bye. The only game that they have is when they go to Mississippi State. Mississippi State's coming off a bye, and that's the week after they play LSU.
Yeah, that could be a tricky game for the Tide.
Exactly.
Boy,
so that's
State,
one to keep an eye on.
If State had them beaten 2 years ago, and how things would look different here in Athens if Mississippi State could have held on to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I know we were going to talk about the prospects. What can we say that I guess really hasn't already been said? Great get to get Kendall Milton. Another, as I have thought of, another pit maneuver by Coach Pittman getting another lineman. I mean, it's just great stuff on the recruiting front.
Yeah, I mean, it's just gotten to where you're almost like, oh, Georgia has another five-star commitment. Like, you're getting to a point almost, and I hate to be this way, where it's not that exciting anymore because it's just – it keeps happening over and over. And now you're also at the point where you're just expecting it to happen. Like the other night with Kendall Milton, everyone had a pretty strong guess and feeling that he was committing to Georgia. And so when he did, it was almost like, well, it wasn't as exciting as maybe it could have been if you just really had no idea where he was going. But all indications were that Milton was coming here and it's where he committed.
So. What does it say about Fresno? Because his town's list is Clovis, California. It's Fresno.
Yeah.
So did you see the video that he – like his announcement video where he's in his neighborhood and he's on that red and black Jeep and there's a big Georgia banner and he's riding on it? So obviously that was done before he made his announcement. But what does it say about like if you tried to do that in a neighborhood here in Athens – about, you know what I mean, or anywhere in the South, people would be like, hey,
yeah,
he's making a commitment video for Georgia.
I know.
How did that not get out?
I guess Fresno, they're not
they're not worried about it.
Yeah.
Or it's just they're not locked in on that.
Or maybe they just realize, like, yeah, I mean, we get it. Fresno was good last year.
They are.
And I think, didn't he maybe give him a courtesy visit or something?
Well, his brother played for Fresno.
Oh,
right?
Did he?
Yeah, so there's a connection there, and obviously, the guy's not going to go to Fresno. I think the weird thing is, it's just like how – I mean, I get it with we were talking earlier about East Coast and all that stuff, but, you know, the California schools, Pac-12, they weren't even really in consideration. And one of the reasons the Pac-12's hurting is because USC is not good right now, and there's the questions. I don't think – like, would a Kendall Milton have had USC on his – would he have been going there if Pete Carroll were still the coach and they were rolling along?
They would have at least been a finalist.
Oh, yeah, they would have been in the picture. But now, with where they are, you know, the top, what, at least three or four players in California aren't even playing, not even at USC, but not even going to a school in California.
Well, now, I mean, how many of these coaches out east are like, hey, you hear you're going to start games at 9 a.m. out there, right?
That doesn't help either.
Yeah. You know, that means you're going to have to get up at like 4 in the morning.
The pregame meal is at 5 a.m.
Yeah. I like that Kyle Whittingham. He loves it. Mike Leach is like, that's not such a hot idea.
Mike Leach is like, this is terrible.
Yeah, dumb idea.
Yeah.
Although Whittingham at least would be in the Mountain Time Zone, so it'd only be 10 a.m. for him.
That's true.
And I guess the same for Mel.
Yeah.
In Colorado.
Yeah. Mel's had some good stuff to say too. The other thing I was going to say too about what does it say about the the Pac-12 when Utah is your preseason favorite. I'm not banging on Utah, but that's like if you've got a year rolling around in the SEC where just things have gotten to the point where the top teams are down and like Missouri or Mississippi State's the preseason favorite in the conference, that's probably not good.
Yeah, the reality is like USC should be completely owning that division it's in.
Exactly.
Because you got the two Arizonas, Utah, Colorado, and then UCLA, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I guess the uncertainty about Helton just doesn't help, is not helping recruiting.
Yeah, but
and
they,
Chip Kelly hasn't knocked it out of the park at all.
No, but that should be like a almost like a Clemson situation where the USC is
like what they were doing 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah. Where they're going to be in the Pac-12 title game, and if they lose a game, it's maybe one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
But they can't even get that conference can't even get a team in the playoff.
Yeah.
So they, you know, they're hurting with USC, but that's where we are in college football right now.
Yeah, but Utah is – absolutely Utah, we've seen them. They've been in the Sugar Bowl. They've been in the Fiesta Bowl, and they won both of them too.
Yep.
Beat Alabama in that one Sugar.
Yeah.
Who'd they beat that weird Pitt team that was weird, like 500.
When they had Alex Smith, right? Was it that
yeah,
long
when
ago?
Urban Meyer was
yeah,
the
when
coach.
Urban Meyer was the coach.
Yeah, and I guess Mullen was the OC.
The quarterback whisperer.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I love it. Like you said, I mean, it just – Kirby and his staff are doing such an unbelievable job recruiting that we are almost getting to the point where, like, all right, we got a five-star verbal commitment, a running back out of California. I mean, just think how crazy that sounds.
Or even like, oh, another 300-pound lineman. Yep, sounds about right.
Yeah.
Because we're just – it really feels like if we want a guy, we're just getting him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the guy that was verbally committed from Texas, the lineman who's now going to – A&M, I guess.
Yeah.
It's almost like, oh, well, we'll just replace him with Chad Lindbergh. Just get another guy out of Texas.
From Texas,
That might be even better.
So, yeah, there's two commitments and both out-of-staters. And Georgia's, right now, the highest-rate commits. You got Mekhi Sherman from D.C. And now
– on the numbers, Sherman is – this is in the 247 Sports Composite. Sherman is number 13 in the country. Broderick Jones is number 21, the offensive lineman out of Lithonia, and Milton is number 22.
All right.
And then you've got Tate Ratledge, the offensive lineman from Rome, number 35, and then the receiver, this guy named, Marcus Roseme, the receiver out of Fort Lauderdale, he's number 45 in the country. And he really – talked about him a whole lot.
No.
Although it's just, continuing. Oh, yeah, so those are the top 50 guys that Georgia has right now.
We need D-linemen.
Yes, indeed. Although right now there's Warren Brinson, there's Jamil Burrows, there's Jalen Carter, there's Nazir Stackhouse. So, yeah, they're coming.
Yeah, and Trayvon Walker's here.
I think Jordan Davis is going to have a big – sophomore year.
Yeah.
So I think it's getting better.
It's getting better, but
it ain't Clemson. But then again, that was what they had last year. That was like, I mean, that's historically an all-timer.
Yeah. I'm telling you, Auburn's got – they're
and
close
Auburn's
this
good.
Year.
Yeah.
With that, what they've got with, I mean, two guys we would have loved to have had, Big Cat Bryant and Derek Brown.
Derek Brown and Big Cat Bryant.
Yeah. All right, there you go. Episode 97. The crossover podcast presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville and Five Points. So by the time we get to kickoff, we'll have hit 100, huh? Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, we'll have a big milestone of the crossover podcast. Again, subscribe to us, review us, rate us on iTunes. Whenever we drop a new episode, we'll just show up there. We'll come find you, or you can listen anytime on your own on demand at 960theref.com. For Dave, I'm Chris. This has been the Crossover Podcast presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to the Crossover presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen on 960theref.com.